Long ago, before this day's confusion did begin, throughout the stars did we go wandering. Distance was no barrier, and time it had no hope. Free to come and free to go. Free to come and free to go. Open up the book, the book of stars.
Everyone, and welcome to Karmic Evolution's Astrologically Speaking. Happy New Year, everyone, even if it is a little belated. I'm your host, Sherry Horn Hassan of Karmic Evolution Astrology, and I'm coming to you on January 5th, 2022 from Contact Talk Radio. Just a quick reminder that this show aims to bring you the truth about astrology and your soul's karmic evolution. So first, before I launch into this week's Astro News You Can Use, my usual housekeeping stuff, which is to tell you you can listen to this podcast anytime by simply going to my website at karmicevolution.com and clicking on the upper right-hand portion of the banner labeled podcast. From there, you can also scroll down the page, hear the most recent show. You can hear me live. The show drops every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific and 2 p.m. Eastern. Or you can go there anytime, listen to the show. You can also listen to the show on any of your favorite podcast channels. But if you go to my website and you scroll down the page, you will be able to download a free How to Keep Your Sun Sign Happy PDF, which is friendly advice for every sun sign from renowned evolutionary astrologer Stephen Forrest about what each of us, depending on our individual sun sign, actually needs to be happy. Separately, you can always follow me on my Facebook page, which is Karmic Evolution for Your Soul, and you can find me on Instagram at karmic.evolution, where I post shorter updates. In addition, I want to let everybody know, as I said in my last podcast, I'm still offering my one-hour discounted Karmic Evolution Natal Insight reading right now to listeners for only $99. And this reading is for those who are interested in astrology, want to learn more about the true meaning of their individual birth chart, and, you know, how we can look at it as essentially a snapshot of the exact position of the planets at the precise moment and location of your birth, because this reveals a great deal about you. So if you're either someone who's been studying astrology for a while or a newbie, I call you astrology enthusiasts, when you use my Karmic Evolution Natal Insight reading as a tool for soul growth, it can be tremendously helpful, especially if you want to gain greater insight into why you're here, what's your purpose and mission in this lifetime, if you'd like to move from chaos to clarity about what might be holding you back in any of the major areas of interest that pretty much I would say all humans fall into, at least one or two of these categories: your relationships, your career, your finances, your health. So a natal chart reading can lead to the understanding and healing also of old karmic wounds and help you to co-create your own future happiness and success through recognizing through astrological insight where your soul may have been conditioned to have certain beliefs that lead us to make certain decisions as we move forward in this lifetime. But if you want to learn more about that and how you might be able to now make different decisions going forward, because you become more conscious of why you've made those other decisions which might not have panned out as well for you in the past, then my one-hour $99 discounted Karmic Evolution Natal Insight reading for my for listeners only. This is an offer only for my podcast listeners. As I like to say, at almost half the regular price, conscious awareness has never been so easy or so affordable. So you can find easy access to this offer at karmicevolution.com/karmic99. Now, I let everybody know 2 weeks ago, because I did take the last week of December off. I was on vacation. My son is home from law school visiting, so my mind was not on astrology, needless to say. But this offer, which I've been, you know, putting out there for quite some time, is due to end starting on January 31st. As of February 1st of this year, 2023, I'll be changing my offer from a one-hour reading for $99 to a 75-minute, which is an hour and a quarter, Karmic Evolution Natal Insight reading for $125. And there's a number of reasons for that which really aren't relevant, but I think it's more beneficial for you as the readee, if I'm the reader, you're the readee, right? that I have to see if that's actually a word. Anyway, it provides a bit more time for us to dialogue and for you to fully grasp the content and meaning of your reading. I found most of them go to about an hour and a quarter, and, you know, that just to be blunt, that wasn't fair to me, right? So anyway, it's hard, you know, when you're about being of service, you know. I'm sure many of you get what I'm saying. Anyway, so if you'd like to purchase either as a gift for yourself or for others, the one-hour Karmic Evolution Natal Insight reading for only $99, please do so between now and January 31st, because again, that offer will be going away as of February 1st. Now, finally, the Astrological Society of Princeton, and I'm very excited about this, is still taking signups for my new evolutionary astrology class, which is titled Fate, Free Will, and Your Soul's Evolution. And this class is for those who want to learn to read or delineate charts from an evolutionary astrological perspective, and to better learn the truth about past life karma and your soul's karmic evolution. So during this 8-week course, you'll learn how to decipher and synthesize how the nodes in the chart by sign, house, and aspects, as well as the sign, house, and aspects to and from the rulers of both the north and the south nodes, tell one's past life story, and how this quote-unquote story influences your present life. So this class will help you move from chaos to clarity, again, through astrological insight about your soul's true purpose and mission in this lifetime, or if you're learning to read charts and you'd like to incorporate the evolutionary technique, this will help you to better understand other people's charts, what's blocking you now based on soul conditioning from early this lifetime or past life karma, and how understanding this soul conditioning can help you to overcome blockages and succeed in your relationships, your career, your finances, and or your health. So if you'd like to read again your own or others' charts with a focus on how what seemed to be faded from the past can actually be overcome through free will and making new choices in the future, then this class is for you. So the class is going to begin on Monday, January 23rd, and it'll be on Zoom, and it will be held from 7 to 8:30 p.m., and it, again, as I said before, will run for 8 weeks. So the class will be recorded if you have to miss one, or if you want to even get it, you know, after the fact. The recordings will be sent out to you after the actual sessions. So if you'd like more information or if you'd like to sign up, please go to ASP. That's for the Astrological Society of Princeton. It's aspnj.org. And of course, feel free to email me at Sherry, that's S-H-E-R-I, at karmicevolution.com. If you have any questions about the class, I'm happy to answer them. All right, so let's get on now to this week's Astro News You Can Use. We are in the waxing portion of the monthly lunar cycle since December 23rd's Capricorn new moon until we hit tomorrow's Cancer full moon, which occurs at 16 degrees and 21 minutes of the Cancer Capricorn polarity at 3:08 p.m. Pacific time and 6:08 p.m. Eastern time. And tomorrow, of course, is January 6th. So, as I've pointed out previously, the energies of the Capricorn new moon from December 23rd asked us to plant seeds that would help move us forward responsibly and maturely to successfully heal past wounds, including those related to our personal and collective health. So my point, so I had mentioned, I'm sorry, I just got, if you listen to my last podcast, which was from before the 23rd, you may recall that I noted that that Capricorn new moon on December 23rd was conjunct Hygieia. And Hygieia is the goddess asteroid of health. Hygieia was the daughter of Asclepius, who is known as the father of modern medicine, who taught his daughter, and Asclepius was taught by Chiron, so the wounded healer. But together, the sun, the moon, and Hygieia and Capricorn formed a T-square to Ceres, and Ceres, as I explained, well, T-square to Ceres, which was opposite Jupiter, okay, in Aries. So at that time, I explained the myth of Ceres and how she was the mother of Persephone, who was kidnapped by Hades, Pluto, put on the throne of the netherworld. And during that period, because Ceres was the goddess of the grain, her mourning for her missing departed daughter, which no one would help her get back, stopped the growth of crops. And in that period, because she's related to what I call sustenance, right, both in the form of food and faith. I mean, without food, she's the goddess of the grain, of the harvest, right? If the crops can't grow, and we know about manna from heaven, and, you know, bread is the basic of all life in terms of agrarian societies, but even still, right, we all need carbohydrates. In any case, my point is that without food, it's certainly difficult to have much faith in one's physical, earthy, mortal survival, right? And that's in large part because the goddess asteroid of health, Hygieia, again, had joined with both luminaries to form this T-square to the goddess asteroid of sustenance, which I liken to literal food and also faith, because if you're not healthy enough to survive, how can you have faith in your life, in your survival, right? And Ceres, which opposed Jupiter and Aries. So at that time, in the news, right, there was a rise, and I had pointed this out, in what the media was calling a triple-demic of COVID, the flu, and RSV, which is a respiratory illness affecting, unfortunately, mostly very young children. And since then, and as we approach tomorrow's full moon in Cancer, we've seen the discovery of a new COVID variant known as XBB 1.5, which, according to the publication The Guardian, which is a British publication, and I quote, now accounts for 40% of COVID cases in the U.S., raising fears of fresh waves of illness as it spreads to other countries. It's one of the latest descendants of Omicron, the highly transmissible version of COVID that caused cases to surge in the U.K. last winter. Offshoots of Omicron have dominated global COVID infections ever since XBB 1.5 evolved from the XBB variant of Omicron, itself a fusion of two different BA2 variants. And that's an end quote. And here in New Jersey and New York, well, I live in New Jersey, but in this area, the local Patch publication reports, and I quote here, a new offshoot of Omicron variant has quickly taken over the region, accounting for nearly three-quarters of all COVID-19 infections in New Jersey, according to the latest CDC data. That's the Center for Disease Control, the government arm. And it points out in this article, the CDC produces variant proportion data by region, and New Jersey's region also includes New York, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And the article goes on to say the XBB 1.5 variant only made up 2.8% of total cases across the region during Thanksgiving week, but XBB 1.5's grasp increased to 72.2% of cases as of last week. End quote. Well, the good news is that there's currently no evidence that XBB 1.5 causes more serious disease than others of the Omicron strain, and the COVID vaccines continue to reduce the likelihood of severe illness and death from the virus. And that's according to the Patch publication. And we've had also the rise of COVID in China since the government there lifted its super restrictive lockdown of citizens over the past 2 years, and emergency rooms there have been flooded with COVID patients. I read that the Chinese, especially in rural areas, tend to use the emergency room instead of going to an individual doctor. So their emergency rooms, like I said, have been flooded. And according to Reuters, as of today, January 5th, quote, the World Health Organization received data from China on new COVID-19 hospitalizations after a reporting gap, with figures on Thursday showing a nearly 50% increase in the week to January 1st. The UN Health Agency received no data from China in the weeks after Beijing lifted its zero COVID policy in early December, prompting some health experts to question whether it might be hiding information on the extent of its outbreak. Now, according to an article that I found in the Times of India, which was dated December 31st, and I quote, COVID-19 will reach its first peak in infections in China January 13th, with 3.7 million cases a day, while deaths are estimated to peak 10 days later at approximately 25,000 a day, according to a UK-based research firm, Airfinity. Now, according to that company's predictive analytics, this article says, the toll since December will rise to 584,000 by the end of January and further increase to 1.7 million by the end of April. So I think it's important to note, and I'm going to talk about it too, that, you know, this Ceres opposite Jupiter aspect is still in play at this Cancer new moon. But since that Capricorn new moon, we ended 2022 and began the new year with a Venus-Pluto conjunction, which occurred on December 31st or January 1st, depending on your time zone. And what I noticed is that during the waxing portion, I'm switching gears now, but I mean, the point is that, you know, the health aspects in the sky were obvious at the Capricorn new moon on December 23rd, and they continue. And what I just read to you and said to you is my way of exemplifying the energies at both of these lunations as they're part of the same lunar cycle, right? The new moon to the full moon until we hit the next new moon. So we're in the middle of it, and it will be culminating tomorrow. But meanwhile, I want to go back also and discuss the Venus-Pluto conjunction, which happened, as I said, on December 31st or January 1st, depending on your time zone. And what I noticed is that during the waxing portion of this aspect, which means a day or two before it perfected, the U.S. House of Representatives January 6th committee released 6 years of Donald Trump's tax returns to the public. Now, I noted also in my recent, earlier this week, Facebook post and newsletter that this Venus-Pluto conjunction in Capricorn relates to all manner of things, relationships and financial. One of the latter being because Pluto represents joint resources, and those include financial resources. That's the addition of both Pluto and Venus, such as mortgages, insurance policies, etc., or anything held by one individual and another individual, or an individual and a group. In this case, a company, because the conjunction was in Capricorn. So Venus-Pluto has a great capacity for love triangles, as well as manipulation through tactics such as jealousy and guilt. And Pluto, of course, is the god of the underworld. He's the one who kidnapped and raped Persephone, and therefore represents all things hidden and all things taboo. So this conjunction brought out into the light one of Donald Trump's secrets that he'd tried to hide for years, his tax returns. And so far, the testimony given by his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, when he appeared in front of a congressional committee, probably like 2-3 years ago now, that his testimony appears to be true, that Trump inflated assets when it suited him and deflated them when it was to his advantage, tax-wise. And apparently, the IRS, more hell-bent on going after little guys like you and me, didn't pick any of this up. In any case, as many of us noticed, this Venus-Pluto conjunction also took away to another realm several prominent people who crossed over at that time, including journalist Barbara Walters, former Catholic Church's Pope Benedict XVI, and Brazilian soccer great Pelé. Now, as I mentioned, the Ceres opposition to Jupiter in Aries has been in place since the last lunation and still now at the upcoming Cancer full moon tomorrow, January 6th. So most astrologers are familiar with the fact that Jupiter, known in traditional astrology as the great benefic who brings blessings and good fortune, often makes an appearance in death charts. Now, of course, he's in every chart, but I'm saying he's usually kind of prominent. And here, I feel that the Ceres-Jupiter opposition, and Ceres is in Libra, Jupiter in Aries, alerted us to the fact that there might be the passing out of their mortal bodies, that's the Ceres part, right, prominent individuals. And that prominence is due to the fact that the Capricorn sun was present in these lunations. Capricorn is about success and reputation out in the world. Now, tomorrow, January 6th, however, the message of the sensitive, compassionate, nurturing Cancer moon to the Capricorn sun-Mercury retrograde conjunction, which perfects on January 7th, is to implore them to release any single-minded focus on success and to instead embrace a less restrictive and more progressive way for the future. Again, the Cancer full moon occurs at 16 degrees 21 minutes at 3:08 p.m. Pacific and 6:08 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. So the Cancer moon asks the Capricorn sun, what's the harm in a little coddling? So necessary for anyone who's been wounded in the past by the harsh boundaries of this mortal coil, our physical body in the physical world. And why can't we deviate from tradition, as doing so can only help ensure humanity's future progress? What are we so afraid of? So through those questions, the Cancer moon highlights the Capricorn sun's shadow side. Its rigid, judgmental stance that brooks little to no tolerance for emotional entreaties. Rather, the Saturn-ruled Capricorn archetype prefers to pursue a straight, empirically drawn line to help achieve its goals, a path from which it cannot be distracted by any maudlin, overly sensitive pleas of the disenfranchised. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps, boy, reflects an oft-used Capricorn archetypal type refrain. Work hard, keep your nose to the grindstone, build a solid reputation through which you'll gain prominence and wield power over others out in the world. That's the Capricorn way. So the Cancer moon's got her work cut out for her to try to get the Capricorn sun to compromise, to open up to the emotional side of life, and to realize how often he draws that line in the sand and refuses flexibility at all costs. Saturn ruled Capricorn's the judge, after all, and doesn't like to be second-guessed or told he may have misjudged. All the Cancer moon wants is for the Capricorn sun to have a little heart. And that's not asking much in her eyes. Often situations warrant that, she reminds the Capricorn sun. You were young once, right? She asked. You made mistakes, engaged in inappropriate behavior, tested the rules now and then, no? Don't you remember that it was through the compassion of others that you managed to straighten up and fly right? And if not, and you lived your whole life on the straight and narrow, unquestionably obeying every rule, do you think you might loosen up a bit now that you've achieved your goals? It's well known in astrological circles that the Capricorn archetype comes into this world old and becomes younger as he or she ages. We also know that in its extreme, Capricorn energy reflects the adage, that which will not bend will break. The Cancer Moon's argument for greater emotional flexibility may hold more water now since she'll sextile Uranus and Taurus just a few short hours before the full moon's exact lunation on tomorrow, on the 6th. Similarly, the Capricorn Sun's trine to Uranus will have already perfected just 2 hours or so, or hour or two before this podcast drops on January 5th. And Mercury retrograde perfects his trine to Uranus on January 8th. So all of this suggests easy opportunities for the Cancer Moon's message about the importance of not standing in the way of humanity's progress to get through. Now, ditto for the Cancer Moon's waxing watery trine and the Capricorn Sun's sextile to Neptune in Pisces, offering us all easy opportunities for the powers that be to discuss displaying increased empathy toward others as the Sun waxes into its January 7th conjunction with Mercury. The Moon's trine perfects early January 7th, while the Sun's sextile to Neptune becomes exact on January 13th. So in other words, Capricorn is not necessarily prone to compromise, and the Cancer Moon is asking him to do so by looking at this situation less rigidly, more flexibly, and that means more emotionally. So when the Sun joins forces with Mercury retrograde exact on January 7th, the question becomes whether or not we'll take the opportunity now to review where being sticklers for tradition, meaning sticking to tradition with no compromise, may hinder rather than help our future causes. And the Cancer Moon warns them both that really resistance is futile. You know, they're sextiling and trining Uranus. Uranus is Uranus is the only constant is change, right? And Venus, which is now in ideological Aquarius since January 2nd, and then the upcoming Mercury retrogrades waxing trine to Uranus and Taurus, perfecting on January 8th, it's, you know, the Cancer, this lunation is like, dudes, you know, what are you resisting for? It's inevitable. In addition, Venus is waxing toward an airy trine to Mars retrograde in Gemini at this Cancer full moon, and that will perfect on January 9th, can also make it easy for us to find a more harmonious balance between our need for ego dominance versus our ability to compromise within our partnerships. And what's interesting about this lunation too is that just after the Sun and Mercury conjoin on January 7th, which is, of course, after the lunation on the 6th, the transiting true nodes hit 10 degrees, 28 minutes of Scorpio Taurus, the degree of the last April 30th Taurus new moon solar eclipse on January 10th. I don't know why. Oh, I know. Sorry, I didn't mean to be confusing. I confused myself. On January 10th, okay, the transiting true nodes hit 10/28 Taurus, which is the degree of last year's April 30th Taurus new moon solar eclipse. So let's recall now that this eclipse represented, according to traditional astrologer Bernadette Bredy, who writes in her book Predictive Astrology, The Eagle and the Lark, and I quote, the individual's relationship to father figures, that's what this is about, that's what the set of eclipses from April 30th and May 16th, but we're talking about the April 30th one at 10/28 Taurus, that the theme of the eclipse is about the individual's relationship to father figures, authority figures, or the need to take responsibility and control. This is a time to accept the commitments that are presented, commitments which could occur due to another person's illness or another person's unreliability. End quote. And let's recall now the teaching of astrologer and eclipse expert Ronnie Dreyer, who I've had on the show in the past, in the most recent a couple of weeks back in mid-December or early December, which you can go back and listen to, who says that the energy of that eclipse began when the transiting, well, she says in general, the energy of an eclipse begins if and when the transiting nodes hit the eclipse degree before the actual eclipse occurs. And if that's the case, then the energy then starts to culminate at the actual eclipse lunation. However, and if eclipse occurs before the transiting nodes have reached the eclipse degree yet, the energy of that eclipse begins at the lunation and culminates when the nodes hit the exact eclipse degree, at which point, according to Dreyer, something major will have been completed. So, what have we witnessed thus far as we're heading toward tomorrow's culmination of this lunar cycle, this monthly lunar cycle, pitting the emotionally sensitive Cancer moon against the rigid hard line in the sand Capricorn sun and Sirius Mercury retrograde? You know, that means that we're reviewing the situation, as Fagin said in the musical Oliver. Now, that brought me to the current fight of Kevin McCarthy in the U.S. House of Representatives to remain as Speaker of that. Well, he's the minority leader of the House, and he wants to become the majority Speaker of the House. And that's what's going on right now, the fight. And remember, I spoke in the last podcast about Jupiter's re-entrance into Aries being about fighting for a cause or pursuing some kind of crusade. Well, here we have the most hardline members of the Republican Party in Congress, in the House, denying McCarthy their votes because they don't think he's right-wing enough. There are a host of demands McCarthy has already kowtowed to, including up till today, in order to win votes, but it seems thus far these have not been enough to win him his coveted speakership prize. So, Saturn ruled Capricorn is often representative of delay. The fact that this process has been delayed for the first time in the House in 100 years, the last time the House of Representatives did not elect a speaker on the first perfunctory vote was in 1923, makes Capricorn's influence evident here. Now, the other thing is that if the House does not elect a speaker, then the House cannot go into session. The obvious is, you know, I'll point out the obvious about that, which is that, of course, they can't do any business. But they also cannot seat newly elected House members. I'm not going to get into George Santos, although I'd like to, but I don't think we have a chart for him. Not yet, I'm not sure. But, you know, so he's hanging out, and he gets to vote, I think, but he does, and he votes for McCarthy, but he doesn't, he's not a full legislative representative yet because he hasn't been sworn in. So everything is in limbo. Now, let's look at Kevin McCarthy's chart. He was born on January 26, 1965, at 12:40 p.m. in Bakersfield, California. And again, he's currently struggling, at least as far as I know. Congress went into session at noon today, and I've been working on the show. I haven't seen any updates yet. I don't think they've held, I don't know if they've held their first vote yet or not. So there might be some updates. But right now, as I speak, he's currently struggling to hold on to his speakership speakership of the House after 6 rounds of votes over the past 2 days that did not garner him this prize. And when we look at his chart, first of all, let me just say he's got a 6-degree, 42-minute Aquarius sun conjunct Ceres at 10 minutes and 28 degrees of Aquarius in his ninth house. Well, Ceres conjunct his sun at 10 degrees, 28 minutes Aquarius, you say? And what was the degree of the April 30th solar eclipse again, which on January 10th will be met by the transiting true nodes? 10 degrees Taurus, you say? So theoretically, at least, we might imagine that McCarthy assumed, as of April 30th, which was still when there were primaries going on before the November 8th midterm elections, that there'd be a red wave at the November election, and that he'd probably waltz right into the Speaker's office, which previously belonged to Nancy Pelosi. We know, actually, that he's already moved his stuff into that office. So we've got a little bit of arrogance there. But so part of what I'm pointing out here is that the theme of that April 30th eclipse was this father figure thing, an ailing father figure, right? And some of that might be related to the fact that since the midterm elections, Nancy Pelosi gave up her, you know, had to give up, well, now she had to give up her speakership, but she also, you know, she stepped down and is now just a regular member of Congress, although she decided to remain. So there's a certain correlation with that eclipse in terms of politics, right? And that McCarthy thought he would just step right into the position. But he's also got, well, so my point here is that this January 10th represents the culmination of that that April 30th eclipse, which squared his Ceres almost exact. And Ceres in his chart is conjunct his natal sun. So I would include that there too, that the eclipse squared his, you know, eclipse degrees, they put in, you know, nobody wants to give more than a degree and a half or 2 degrees or 3 degrees at the most. But as a psychological astrologer, if two planets are conjunct, I want to, you know, by 4 or 5 degrees, pull that sun into that square to the eclipse. However, we could argue about that. But it's definitely dead on the square to Ceres. So how interesting, right, that Ceres has been so prominent in the sky over these last lunations. Now, McCarthy's also got a 12th house Jupiter at 16 degrees and 33 minutes of Taurus. And guess what? That was within 32 minutes of the 16.01 degree or 16 degree 1 minute Taurus lunar eclipse on November 8th. The date of the U.S. midterm election, which saw no red wave appear. Now, further, according to Bernadette Brady again, the theme of the fall 2022 set of eclipses was, quote, about being forceful and taking power. It has a manic flavor about it, with great force or strength appearing in the relationship area. Individuals experiencing this Saros series may experience sudden events like falling in or out of love or sudden sexual encounters. This individual may also exert a huge effort in some group activity. You know, like trying to get the group to like and respect you enough to vote you in as Speaker of the House, perhaps. So now, first, I want to say, and I'm not big on predictions, but if we follow Ronnie Dreyer's theory or hypothesis, then this should culminate by January 10th. Again, it could culminate today. I don't know. However, you know, we can all check the news if this is an area of interest for us as soon as this podcast is over or have checked it before. But one of the things that's interesting about Kevin McCarthy's chart is that, so he's got the Aquarius sun in the ninth house. He's got a 3 degree, 33 minute moon in Sagittarius, basically just under his descendant, which to me means it's in the seventh house of partnership, and a Gemini rising at 4 degrees, 45 minutes. Okay. So those are the three basics. But he also has a south node in the seventh house. That is someone who comes in from earlier past life karma, probably more willing to compromise and negotiate than fight. But in the sign of Sagittarius, which also says that although they may be great adventurers, they also may have come into this lifetime thinking that they know everything and that their mission, or in his case, McCarthy's mission, is to move from the seventh house Sagittarius energy to the first house Gemini energy. And the first house is to be independent, and the second in partnership, and the Gemini is to open up to new information and new perceptions, to explain why you have the beliefs that you came in with, right? And to kind of go through that elementary linear way of explaining, well, I believe this. Okay, why? Because A, B, C, D, etc., you know, an elementary tree of learning, right? But so he's comes in willing to compromise and negotiate, perhaps because he's afraid of conflict. Yet he has an Aries moon, but that Aries moon is also in Libra's, Venus's Libra's seventh house, which proposes that there's a conflict there. I want to fight, but I don't know. I have to learn how, right? Because I am not a fighter by nature. I am someone who would rather compromise and negotiate. Now, that may not seem like his behavior now, but the other thing I'd point out is that he has a grand mutable cross, because the nodes, which are at 20 degrees, 36 minutes of Sagittarius south node, to the Gemini North Node at the same degree, is squared by his 11th house Chiron, Wounded Healer Chiron, at 15 degrees, 54 minutes of Pisces, which opposes his fifth house, 14 degree, 13 minute Uranus in Virgo, and his 15 degree, 56 minute Pluto in Virgo. Now, clearly, he was born in 1965, very close to this exact, well, both of them were retrograde, but close to this exact Uranus-Pluto conjunction of that era, which I have a tendency to look at as, you know, I mean, it's volatile, right? You know, Pluto is plutonic energy, and nuclear energy, and Uranus is like, you know, sudden. So sudden changes, which is what we had going on from the mid-60s on. You know, if anyone has seen the Richard Tarnas documentary or read his book Cosmos and Psyches, you know that it's all about that era. But they're opposed by Chiron, and all of them square his nodes. So this tells us that this is a karmic issue for him, where he was wounded in the 11th house, 11th house naturally ruled by Uranus, about friends, groups, and associations. That tells us that he was probably came into this lifetime feeling like an outsider, okay? So what do you do if you have a south node in the seventh house, an Aries moon? I'm sorry, not an Aries moon. I made a mistake. I spoke out of turn. He has a Sagittarius moon, not an Aries moon. So let me revise that. Sagittarius moons are usually happy-go-lucky, you know, the glass is always half full, etc. Perhaps that is why he moved into the Speaker of the House's office before he actually attained the position. And it's in the seventh house. So again, it wants to do what it wants to do, just as the south node does, because they're fire signs, but they may be held back because they're afraid of conflict, to put it, you know, nutshell. In addition, he's got Saturn in Pisces. He's coming up to a Saturn return because Saturn in March will enter Pisces, and then his Saturn is at 357 Pisces, so at approximately 4 degrees or the degree before, he will start to have his second Saturn return. But that moon at 333 Sag squares his Saturn at 357, I'm sorry, 950. Oh, let me put my glasses on. No, it's a tight square. It's 333 for the moon in Sag to Saturn at 357. Okay, sorry, I said three before. Anyway, that's a sign of insecurity. That's a sign of the heart and the mind not being in correspondence, right? So Saturn in the 10th house is a signature of someone who worries about what other people think and yet also wants to be successful. So we can see that he's got, you know, a bit of this back and forth, right? Because do I do it? Do I not do it? Should I do it? Should I not do it? But it's compounded by the fact that his ability to be empowered, because theoretically, at least if I had him in front of me, I would ask him what happened earlier in this lifetime where you might have lost a friend or a lover, you know, perhaps as a teen or something, because that Uranus, Pluto, and they're also wide connected to Mars. So the Uranus is at 14, the Pluto at almost 16, and Mars is at 28 of Virgo. So they're not all conjunct. But Mars is in the mix here in the fifth house. But the other two are opposed, as I said, by Chiron, and they all square the nodes. So something happened, I believe, that led him to feel ostracized from the group or friendship, like a friend stealing your girlfriend, something like that, right? And that's interesting, too, because there's something in here about his, what was it? I don't know if it was his Vesta. Where is it? Mars. Where's Mars? Mars is opposing Vesta. And this is what, it caught my eye, and this is what it says in the Solar Fire program. So just as a point of interest, hold on, let me find Vesta here. Where are you, Vesta? Okay. The Solar Fire program says that Mars opposite Vesta, and this is from Virgo to Pisces, do you respect women? Do you hold them in sacred regard? If not, then you're likely to face some obstacles in your life. This combination of the fiery planet Mars and the sacred goddess Vesta indicates that you need to respect your own health and well-being and other people's, in particular women. Now, let's be mindful of the fact that Kevin McCarthy is anti-choice, right? This goes on to say, you also need to ensure that you discover what lights your fire and never let the passion fade. Sexuality may be another challenge in your life. You need to develop a reverence for sexual communications. If sex is too hot to handle, then you may need to retreat for periods of time to gather your own creative fires and boundaries. You're destined to direct your energies into something sacred, an activity, project, or profession that inspires others. A woman or group of women may provide you with the encouragement you need, but you also need to fan the flames yourself without resorting to aggression. Okay, so I would say that thus far, especially given his stance in terms of abortion, he's failed. He's failed at integrating these energies, right? And even though, they actually technically also square as separate from the Chiron opposite Uranus Pluto, the nodes, all right? But I wanted to go to the fact that, as I said, the April 30th eclipse at 10:28 squared his series, and that the November 8th eclipse hit head-on his Jupiter, his 12th house Jupiter, and that eclipse, or the effects of that eclipse, began on August 28th, because the nodes hit that 1601 degree, and culminated on November 8th, okay? So November 8th is when the, or following after we got all of the election results, that's what solidified the Republicans' majority in the House of Representatives, right? And thus gave, you know, Kevin McCarthy probably his optimism about moving stuff into the Speaker's house, a Speaker's office the week before he actually was destined to potentially take that office. Okay, so what I'd like to point out now is that when I do the psychological analysis or use psychological techniques to analyze his dominant function and inferior function, the Jungian terms, we get that he comes out mutable earth. Okay, now mutable earth is Virgo. So there is some indication here that this guy does want to be of service, right? But he comes out with an inferior function, which means that this element lies beneath the level of consciousness. Inferior function in air, because he has only one planet in air, and that's his Aquarius sun. And an inferior function in fire, which is because his only planet in a fire sign. And this technique does not use the angles or any of the asteroids or Chiron, just the nine basic bodies, including, of course, Pluto. So he's got inferior function in air and inferior function in fire. And according to Richard Eideman, who wrote that book, The Magic Thread, which teaches you how to analyze this stuff, it's probably a good bet that Kevin McCarthy suffers from anxiety, perhaps panic attacks, perhaps he's got some phobias, claustrophobia, agoraphobia, things like that. Difficulty understanding space in relationships and poor timing. He lacks objectivity, all right? So Eideman says that the inferior function in air manifests as the trickster. It jolts us into intellectual cognitive awareness, provides us the aha moment experience of now I understand. So it brings the great gift of awareness. But air is about the social side of relationships, and when it erupts into consciousness, because that's what an inferior function element or modality does, it can feel like madness because we may see things so clearly but feel like we don't have a framework to put it all in. So we feel lost or annihilated by the vastness of it all. But the gift of a singleton, which is one planet in an element, or no planets, which is inferior function, is, however, often a kind of brilliance or genius in one particular area, but an inability to function in others. A good example is Albert Einstein, who lacked air also. Jupiter in Aquarius was his only air, and he was brilliant, but he couldn't find his way out of a paper bag, or so they used to say. Now, the second inferior function, which I think is more to the point of his behavior that we've experienced in public, is in fire, and the lack of inferior function of fire can actually make one depressed or manic, all right, or possibly that's a cyclical thing. Now, I'm not diagnosing him. I'm just saying, you know, it can make you feel helpless in the face of the world. It can result in a lack of energy, which is somatized depression, and it can also be present in one who experiences a certain amount of rage or aggression, right? And it also can manifest as obsessive behavior. So I think what we see here with Kevin McCarthy as this little play is going to be culminating, I would assume, based on the eclipse information, by January 10th, if not way before. I mean, 5 days is a long time, although there's a weekend in between, but the house can meet on the weekends too, that we have this guy who flip-flops a lot, right? Because we know that he's been giving away the store. Even today, all these concessions to all these hardline right-wingers who are voting against him and denying him the speakership. So he's pretty much self-noted himself in the seventh house into so many compromises that he's got nothing left to compromise or negotiate with. And again, that Chiron opposite that Uranus-Pluto, I think, along with the inferior function, particularly in fire, he goes back and forth and back and forth about feeling empowered and feeling disempowered, feeling empowered and feeling disempowered. If you look at his record, I just Googled him on Wikipedia, and there's no more time in this podcast to go into it. But if you read through his, what do you call it? He's changed his stances in certain ways. He has become more conservative, obviously, and obviously in aligning with Trump since 2016, actually. He's part of the whole MAGA crew, but the thing is that he goes back and forth. He's changed his opinions over time in a flip-flop kind of way, which is very much indicative of a 7th house moon, a 7th house south node. Well, I see your point of view. Oh, yeah, I agree. Well, wait, I see your point of view too. Oh, my goodness, right? And that's what leads to indecisiveness in the personal decisions that a Libra-oriented person makes. But it's squared by this Chiron, which feels out of place. It feels like it doesn't belong. And so it's seeking, with that Saturn in the 10th, to gain a great reputation, to overcompensate for any feelings of incompetence or whatever. And that Uranus Pluto, that power could be taken away any day, right? And fifth house is house of relationships and romance, 11th house of friends. Somebody could just disappear. Wait a minute, where are you people? Oh, don't go. Oh, wait, I promise I'm going to change. I'll give you this, you know, I'll give you that. And that's what I see him doing. And then the icing on the cake is just what I read to you from the Solar Fire program about Mars opposition to Vesta, which was also squares the nose, which is this you know, kind of sexual stuff that I guess we would call misogyny, right? So anyway, I hope you've enjoyed this deeper dive into McCarthy's chart. I'm not looking at his transits and progressions to try to predict whether he will take the speakership or not. It is still possible that might happen, and I'm not in the habit of predicting, but I do think that if everyone wants to consider all that I've said here about these eclipses or take a look at his chart and make your own decisions, you know, have at it. That's what we astrologers do, right? So by this time next week, hopefully, it will all come clear. And so thank you, everyone, for joining me today. I hope you found the information presented here helpful as you continue your karmic evolution in this lifetime. Please be sure to join me next week on January 12th. We'll talk, among other things, about the Mars station direct on that day in Gemini and some of the upcoming transits. And, you know, so please be sure to join me then for another episode of this show. Until then, may your journey be filled with karmic healing and the joy of greater consciousness. Namaste.
Long ago, before this day's confusion did begin, throughout the stars did we go wandering. Distance was no barrier, and time it had no hope. Free to come and free to go. Free to come and free to go. Open up the book.